a mess, it's true. But chicas, we got work to do. Embrace the feathers with a passion. Ladies, this is fashion. I know it all could fall apart, but we don't fall, cause we got heart. We keep on pushing under pressure. Gotta hold it all together, so we sew.
Make it work, make it work.
Now the fan is broken.
Make it work, make it work.
I'm running out of fan.
When something breaks, make it work instead.
Ay, pero the heat.
Think of it as a sauna.
Make it work.
And my machine always vibrating. Enjoy it.
Make it work.
Rosalie, you need lipstick to sew?
I need lipstick to live. I came alone from El Salvador, saving up to travel back before my mother sold and bent. But first, I need to pay my rent.
I got three hungry mouths to feed, got twin boys at home who always need new sneakers, always double, keep them out of trouble, so I sew.
I sew,
I sew.
Make it work, make it work.
When your legs are cramping,
make it work, make it work.
Try a little dancing.
Make it work, make it work.
If you prick your finger,
make it work, make it work.
Make sure the fabric's wet.
When something breaks, make it work instead. Ah, spinning gold out of motion, working hard for the pay. A little gossip and cheese man gets you through another day. Suck it up for the future.
Chicas, we just got a new order from Mrs. Wright. 200 dresses in 3 weeks.
Estela, ¿estás completamente loca?
This is the chance of a lifetime, comadres! Mrs. Wright said she's impressed.
That's an impossible order.
But in 1 year, look at how far we've come.
Pero 3 weeks.
I know my team and we're the best.
We make it work.
It might be crazy, but we'll get it done.
A little lipstick,
a little stitching,
a little cheese man,
a little bitching.
Probably on a mission, so we sew.
Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I am extremely excited for this guest on this episode because Benjamin Velez is here. Hi, Benjamin. How are you?
Hi, Donald. I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm here. Benjamin is the co-wrote music and lyrics, as well as co-arrangements and co-orchestrations for Real Women Have Curves, the Broadway musical. It was his Broadway debut. He's also wrote The Tempest for Shakespeare in the Park, the musical called Borderline. Also has worked with John Leguizamo on Kiss My Aztec, which we'll talk a little bit about later at the end of the show, because I'm hoping that there'll be some interesting future news for that show, because I know that that's been in development for a while. Benjamin has also won the Jonathan Larson Award, the Fred Ebb Award, the Klebon Award for his work. And I wanted to start the interview talking about your Playbill bio, because your Playbill bio ends with, and I'm going to quote you, "Thanks to everyone who helped me get here, especially my mom for driving me to all those rehearsals." So would you care to share what exactly that meant?
Yes. And I will say that fear of retribution for not thanking her was so strong, despite it being a very small word limit that they gave us.
Uh-huh.
No, my mom is the reason that I was lucky enough to be thrust into the arts at a young age. She saw that I had a love for it. And I've been doing theater and playing piano since I was a kid. And I mean, just the sheer number of rehearsals and lessons and things that require someone really being supportive and having your back for, I will be always eternally grateful. And she and I also have a very we have a very special, complicated relationship, which I'm writing a show about. So,
oh, there you go.
Yeah,
that's good. And where exactly did you grow up?
I grew up in Miami, in Florida.
Ah, cool, very cool. Well, so for people who are not familiar with Real Women Have Curves, you, by the way, just to get the, let's get the credits out of the way, you co-wrote music and lyrics with Joy Huerta, who is a Grammy-winning musical artist in her own right. The book of the show is by Lisa Loomer and Nell Benjamin, who are familiar faces from the world of theater. It was directed and choreographed by Sergio Trujillo, who's fantastic. And it was originally based on a play that was then made into an HBO movie. But give the listeners a little bit of a synopsis without giving too much away as to what exactly the show's about.
Yeah, so the show follows Anna, who is 18 years old and just graduated high school, and her family is Mexican and they're undocumented. She's the only one in her family that's documented, and they have a garment factory that they run. It's set in Los Angeles in 1987. And now that she's graduated high school, they want her to come work at the factory and help the business. She's already been kind of the unofficial face of the business because she is legal. And unbeknownst to the family, she applied to college and got in on a full scholarship. And she's finding this information out at the start of the show. And just as her family got the biggest order they've ever received, and they need extra help. So she's kind of stuck between, does she pursue this dream that she's worked so hard for herself, or does she stay and help the family and after everything they've done for her? So that's kind of the story.
Should have told them then and there. Now I've made myself a mess. And really, what the hell is wrong with me? Why do I always second guess? They gave up so much so I could have more. And if I don't go, what was all of it for? Could I fly away without her on my side? Summer heat and summer sweat dragging me down. What's the point of having wings at all if I never leave the ground? Oh, I settle for less. I'll impress them and show I belong skyward bound. Flying away, doing it all. If I can prove her wrong, maybe my dreams wouldn't have to be small. I'll find a way to get them on my side. If I can be brave enough to show I can fly, flying away, I'll make her see that I'm gonna change the world and still be the daughter she wants me to be. Could I fly away?
how exactly did you get involved with the show?
So it was 2020. Joy and the producers had approached Joy first, right at March of 2020, and then everything shut down.
Yeah.
And she was very excited to work on it, but she had never written a musical, and she asked them to be partnered with someone who had experience writing for theater. And so I don't know exactly how their search went before they found me, but I just happened to be showcasing some music from Kiss My Aztec that summer at a concert that Sergio Trujillo was directing. And Sergio loved what he saw, and he suggested me to the team, and then it all clicked.
Mm-hmm. And how did that work? I mean, how was your writing process with Joy?
It was very natural. We never met in person till almost having a full draft written, because Joy lives in Mexico City and I was living in New York City. And so we wrote our whole first draft on Zoom, which was pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. We like to joke that the technology helped us, because Joy plays guitar and I play piano. And if we were in the same room, we probably couldn't have both been playing around with our own ideas at the same time without bothering each other. So Zoom allowed us to mute each other, and then we would record ideas and send them back and forth to each other. So that part was fruitful. It was a challenge. It's hard. I think what's nice is Joy and I had a very strong rapport from the beginning, where we weren't afraid to embarrass ourselves in front of one another, and that allowed us to have that dynamic you need in a good collaboration, where you're just spitting out every idea that comes and not just censoring what you think are the good ones. And it led to a lot of great songs.
Right. And of course, you're kind of giving her a little bit of guidance in terms of musical theater writing, which is...
Yeah, because it's very different.
It's very different. Yeah. And I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that, because I wanted to ask about writing the score and what the goal was, because the story is set in 1987 in the Boyle Heights neighborhood of Los Angeles, which is my hometown. I'm sitting here in Los Angeles right now, born and raised.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, this is my hometown. So I know Boyle Heights very, very well. Obviously you want to capture that time period and that neighborhood, and all the cultures that you're kind of embracing in the show. Because I saw the show Friday after opening in New York. And so you want to capture all that, but you also need to stay cognizant of the fact that you are working in the musical theater idiom, and you're also writing a show for 2025 audiences on Broadway. So what was the approach that you guys had to take?
I mean, there's a lot of different things to juggle there.
Yeah.
Both because, we didn't expect for the political moment to be as relatable to what the story of the show is, but the fact that we knew we'd be in conversation with these issues today, we still knew that was going to be a factor. And because Joy is known for her pop music, so we wanted an aspect of that style to come through. But we also really wanted to have the world of the factory be our world and feel grounded in these characters, and make sure that every member of the family felt like they had their own musical influences and voice, even if it's subtle, just knowing in our minds how we were approaching writing for each of them, so that it felt like the storytelling could be as clear as possible from that point of view. And it's interesting because we... initially had an opening number that was called Welcome to Boyle Heights, and it was about the neighborhood and how it's this tight-knit community. And as we continued to rewrite, we realized as much as that world of Boyle Heights is central to their lives, the world of the factory is the real story that we're telling. And so we ended up making the opening number in the factory, and there really isn't as much interaction with the larger Boyle Heights community, but we still tried to fit the colors that we had developed for that original number throughout, whether it was in incidental music or even just in the presence of mariachi flavors.
Mm-hmm. No, that really makes sense. 'Cause having seen the show, the world inside the factory and the characters who populate the factory are really what it revolves around. And, you know, I went into the show I had not seen the movie and I had never seen the play.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know I knew what to expect a little bit because I had read the reviews, obviously. And it's a very deceptive show because, I mean, your synopsis it's a very simple version of the show. But it's and then on the surface, it's kind of simple story, but it's tackling a lot of issues. It's tackling a lot of things. It's tackling, like you said, the family and the interpersonal stuff that's going on. There's generational things going on. There's cultural differences going on amongst the women. But it also does tackle working women and struggles of working women. It also is tackling immigration issues because you have undocumented immigrants working in the factory. And it also tackles body image issues. So it's got a lot of things that it's kind of balancing in this show that, but when I have to tell you, I absolutely adored the show. I mean, adored the show. And even though it comes across very simply, you balance it all so well. You tackle all these issues, but you do it with so much art and so much realness that it really works. So how did you guys find that was really a tough assignment? Because you're really balancing a lot of things and making it look realistic.
It was, because we knew that they wanted it to be a comedy, which meant that we couldn't get too dark, and we had to use the songs to show. I think we leaned in the direction of the songs are showing how all these women are coping with the struggles that they meet in their daily lives, but we didn't have the real estate to give each of them their own song, so we had to kind of find ways collectively to maybe, and some of the songs feel a little bit anthemic because they're trying to give these moments where the women stand in their power and also kind of laugh off some of the things that maybe we find horrific, but they survive by not feeling bad for themselves and not having time for self-pity. And I think finding moments to give them that strength, I guess, is something we leaned into. Because the story the source material, Anna is a much less active character in the play and the movie. She's kind of there working for the summer, but she's not actively trying to make their lives better. And we found that challenging at first in terms of how to find Anna's voice, because just singing reflectively wasn't as exciting to us as if she's either trying to prove something or in the case of the character Ezel, that character didn't exist in the source material. And that was an invention that Lisa came up with to give Anna some real stakes in what's happening in around her. Because obviously there's the existential threat that someone in her family might be taken or get deported. But since that doesn't happen, we needed some way for her to feel the visceral impact of, I'm very lucky and I take for granted the fact that I never have to go through my life in fear that something might happen to me. And I think she enters the story at a place where she thinks she understands where they're all coming from. Mm-hmm. And maybe she does to some degree, but not until the experience of that summer and hopefully all the moments we were able to fit in, does she really have a fuller sense that she still has a lot to learn from the strength that they all have.
When you look at birds, they're funny little creatures. But once they're in the sky, they look so mighty. Riding on the wind, all borders disappear. And up there in the sky, they have no fear. If I were a bird, I'd rise above what feels unfair. Up in the sky, the world seems small. Do what I want, go anywhere, because I am free. Sing like a bird, ga-ga! I'd sound my call. So far beyond then, gracefully out of reach from La Migra politicians and boys who just wanna, you know. If I were a bird, I'd chit on that. There's a Mayan bird, we call it the Quetzal. Colorful and bright, a symbol of freedom. It's hardly ever seen, because if it's captured, it would rather starve to death than take another breath. And I won't let no cage
Talk a little bit, just to kind of backtrack a little bit. The show actually had its original run at American Rep in Cambridge. So talk a little bit about that and how that helped in terms of kind of developing what ultimately ended up in New York on Broadway. Because I know there were obviously changes, and it's always good. I know a lot of shows come into New York cold, but I got to tell you, an out-of-town tryout really does help.
It really does help. No, and it wasn't like it was a completely different show, but we definitely cut a few songs and rewrote new ones, and everything became a lot sharper. I think we realized how much the audience was falling in love with the women in the factory. But the problem is we wanted to shave off like 20 minutes from that show in Boston. And so it was trying to give everyone as much meat as possible, but in being as efficient as possible in how we did it. And some of that was with new songs, and some of that was just with a lot of new book. But I think it's really helpful until you hear it in front of an audience, you really don't know what you have. And it's funny because to me, the show plays like a raucous comedy when you are with the audience. But in the rehearsal room, I had forgotten how funny it was until we then saw an audience on Broadway, because it had been so long since the Boston production. And as the writer, you only stay through previews, and then it has its run, and you're not there out of town anymore. And so you kind of forget what lands and what doesn't. And it's a really interesting process. And of course, you leave it at a state where you still feel like you could change a ton of things.
Right.
Little tweaking here and there, but because so much of it is specific to our actors, we had a lot of the same cast, and we had really tried to play it to a lot of their strengths, and they all just felt like such a wonderful unit together. So a lot of things just came out of the more they played, the more we felt inspired for different moments and different jokes.
And I was going to say that I wanted to focus a little bit on the core family, because in a way it's almost like you have two families. In the show,
yeah.
You have the family in the factory, which is the group of women who all work together. But you also have the real central family that owns the factory. And talk a little bit about writing for the three main women of the family, because you've got Carmen, who's the mom, and you've got Estella, and you've got Anna, who are the two daughters. And I thought you did. And I know that part of this is also from Lisa Nell capturing the dynamics of a mom with two daughters and the favoritism and which daughter stays with the factory and which one has ambitions to move away and pursue a career as a journalist. And a lot of the comedy comes out of that, which is just the natural funny stuff that comes out of being part of a family. But talk a little bit about writing musically for the three. Those three women, because it's some of the greatest moments in the show are those moments, because it's really, you've got three very, very distinct female characters who all have, and the amazing thing in the show to me is that they all are so unique, and they are all given their moments to really reveal themselves on stage.
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear you say that. Yeah. I mean, I think that was the biggest thing that clicked for us post Boston was that we were approaching the show as Anna versus Carmen, and Estella wasn't enough of a factor in Boston. And I think we realized you just gain so much more complexity if you beef up Estella and have, even just Anna realizing later in the show, wait, no, you're the strongest one here. Like, everything that I have done is because both of you have lifted me up. But yeah, musically, we wanted to make sure that all three of them had distinct voices. So Anna was born in the States, so she's the most, her musical voice was the most contemporary in terms of her sound. And then Estella is kind of a child of both worlds. She came to the States at a young age, but she has roots in Mexico. So when she has her Daydream song, we wanted to root that in Mexican mariachi sounds, but not, but also have a pop feel to it. And then Carmen, who is both psychologically kind of still stuck in that mentality of importance of family and duty to family. And she's kind of subverted her own dream for the family in a way that she wants Anna to now do. She's the most rooted in traditional Mexican music. So it's kind of like a spectrum of progressively more contemporary. And the act one finale, Oye Muchacha, I feel like it was such a fun puzzle piece to kind of work out. It starts as Anna and Carmen kind of butting heads fine at this climactic moment. And then Estella comes in with this third point of view of like, well, I'm the one that actually is running. It's my factory that's keeping us in afloat. I'm the one that helped the family acclimate to the States. And why don't I feel like the ugly stepsister. Like, why don't I get the credit? Anna's this golden child because she's a citizen. And there's just so much at play and so much to mine there, because they do all love each other and they just all want to feel respected. And it's this interplay between them as individuals and them as the family unit.
You think I didn't have big dreams when I was young too? Oh yeah, mi papá was a mariachi in Mexico. Y one time he caught me dressing up in his jacket and playing his guitar. Shh, he beat the crap out of me. Because he didn't want me to run off and be disappointed.
So your dreams got crushed and now you're crushing mine?
No. I didn't want to break your heart the way that my heart had been broken. But because dreams are meant to die, we have to learn to let them go. Mija, listen, listen to me. Mija, let me try to help you see. Muchacha,
what?
Nothing is wrong with the life that you have. Oye, muchacha,
what?
No seas ingrata, it's not so bad.
So you said, I know.
Oye, muchacha,
yeah.
Mija, I'm just trying to spare you the pain. You will always look like us. Can't you see como nos ven? You can bury a gringo, go to Colombia, but you'll never be one of them.
Every day you've made it clear how lucky that you had me here. But what does being lucky mean if I can't do better?
Get better.
More than just sewing and signing your checks, not a future you've already built. But Anna, your daughter, is stuck underwater, drowning in your guilt.
Oye, muchacha.
What? Don't you get tired of being afraid?
Oye, muchacha.
Fine, I'll never move out and I'll die underpaid.
Hija de la chingada, ven acá. Oye, muchacha.
Even a mom would have to agree that you'll never change your mind. And there's nothing I can do. So I'll marry a gringo, I'll go to Colombia, I'll never be one of you.
I heard yelling, I knew you were home. My dress looks good on you.
Y tú,
Mama.
You knew about Colombia and you kept it from me.
Estela,
your
please.
Sister
she
thinks
listens.
She can
you
just...
Hear
how are you holding up? How's the order coming along?
Not now,
see,
mija,
she
not
doesn't
now.
See us.
You
she
two are
hear.
Exhausting. How can you both be so blind? Both the same, two of a kind. So stubborn and so selfish. Always me, me, me. Chances, this one's all I got.
That's why we need her at the factory, so she can stay and help this family.
Did you forget that when we first arrived, it was me that helped us all get by? But now you act like if she wasn't here, all that I built myself would disappear.
Don't be so so dramatic, that's not what she's saying.
And why does she want you to stay?
To keep us together, it won't be forever.
Do I even have a choice?
Well, we don't have a choice, and that's why we need you.
Do you think it's what I want?
Oye, muchacha!
Why is it nothing I do makes you proud?
Oye, muchacha!
What?
You'll wake up the neighborhood screaming so loud.
Ama, is you who's shouting? Oye, muchacha! Why don't you listen for once in your life?
Ama, I know you lost your dream, and I know how bad that feels. Do you, Ama?
But what if we need you?
Carmencita, Pancha just called. You got a new worker from Guatemala, Itzel. La Migra took her at the bus stop.
Oh no, Itzel, we have to do something.
La Migra knows where we all take the bus. They'll come again, they're gonna come for us.
She's all alone. Do I even have a choice? I have to do something. I'm going to find her.
We're sticking together, no one is leaving, and that is the final word.
Oye, muchacha!
As well written as the characters are, and as blessed as they are with the songs that you and Joy have given them, without the three actors that you have playing those three roles, they would not be what they are. Because those three performers are amazing. They're just
so good.
They're so good. I mean, Laurencia is a force of nature.
Yes.
She just is, as Estella. She is. And Justina is, she was Tony nominated also.
Yeah.
And she is such a musical comedy pro up there that she is knocking the jokes out of the park. That's why the comedy is works so well in the show, is because she knows exactly how to make the jokes land. And all the jokes that are coming out of the mom's mouth are, the audience is in hysterics because she's so funny and she knows how to make it work. And she also knows how to make the emotional stuff work too.
And she's able to flip on a dime. She's able to deliver a stinger, and then in the next second, like, she's crying, and you buy the switch. Like, you really buy that this is a woman who feels deeply, but has built so many layers to protect herself.
And Tatiana as Anna is amazing.
She is.
I mean, she's an amazing find. I mean, fantastic. Yeah. So,
and
I mean,
it's funny, she auditioned for the Boston version and didn't even make it to Final Callbacks. And then we barely remembered her when she came in for the Broadway auditions. And we were like, who is this girl? And how have we not cast her before?
I know.
She was magic.
She's carrying a lot of weight in the show. She really is. She's carrying a lot on her shoulders in the show. And she does an amazing job. And that's also one of the things I wanted to talk about, was the whole casting of the show. You've got a lot of Broadway debuts in this show. And it's tricky because you have a lot of characters who are very real. They're very, you get the sense that they're all very real people. And they're very real. The characters are so drawn that they are very real people, that we all know people who are exactly like these people.
Yeah.
But they're all living in a musical theater world. And they're walking that fine line between stage personas and real life personas. And that's why the audience is with them 100%. Throughout the whole show, because they're walking, the balance is there. And I'm sure a lot of that is because of Sergio.
It is. And no, he created a world with them in the factory where I feel like you feel like you know them way better than you should based on how few lines they each actually have. But they, outside of when they're having their one-liners, they're all inhabiting that space in such an honest place that you really feel like, this is, and these women, it's not like they knew how to sew or do any of these things before they took these roles, but I feel like they tackled it in a way that you really believe that that's a real workplace, and that this is some place that they spend, and they're sweating and spending crazy long hours, and yet they have the energy to make fun of each other, and it feels like a sisterhood in the best way.
Yeah. And, you know, when I went into the performance that I saw, like I said, it was just the Friday after you guys opened on a Sunday, and I was there the following Friday, which was like the day after the Tony nominations came out. And I had heard, I mean, I had heard through the preview period that the audiences were very vocal, boisterous, that there was like mid-show standing ovation at one point. And I was like, really? Okay. Because I had was a little surprised. I was, you know, I've been to a lot of Broadway shows.
Yeah.
And I went and I was genuinely surprised at the feeling in the energy in the audience was different, because you know how Broadway audiences can be. They're paying very high ticket prices to see a Broadway show. And a lot of Broadway audiences can kind of sit there with their arms folded and kind of sit back and say, they have this attitude of, okay, prove it to me. Prove to me that it was worth me spending this money. And they can be, you know, they can sit on their hands and they can be very, you know, reluctant to go along for the ride. But this show was like one of the first shows I can remember in a long time where the audience is totally gets swept up in these women and this story from the get-go. And they are with it all the way. And when you get to the title song, and it's this just total release of absolute outpouring of love from the stage, and then right fed back to them from the audience. I mean, it's just, it was amazing. I mean, I have not seen that before.
That you long for, because I mean, it's a fun song, and if you see it out of context, you might find it catchy and fun, but you won't understand.
It doesn't make any sense if you haven't seen the show.
No, you won't understand the impact it has after like all this tension has built up. And it's interesting because it's not like they've even had that much bad happen to them. It's like the threat of all that bad that could have happened or could happen that then is released then in that moment. And you're right. I mean, it should. It feels like it's greater than the sum of its parts at that moment, in the way it works with an audience. And that's, it's so special.
Take your shirt off.
¿Qué? With these arms, it looks like a hammock.
Show some skin.
A 5-year-old could take a nap.
Let your body.
Cancha!
What's the big deal?
Breathe it in.
I'm the boss, and I say we take it off.
Some of us got stretch marks.
Some cellulite.
Estela.
Some of us got both, and that's all right.
We all got the same.
What's that?
That voice inside.
Yeah, voice.
The fire that makes us survive.
No matter what life throws our way, we can bend, we can dance, we can ricochet. When la vida gets hard, we know what to say.
Real, real women, women have curves.
Real, real women, women have curves.
We work harder. Get paid less.
Yes, we do.
Come home burned out,
then clean their mess.
I hear that.
We're more than daughters.
We're more than wives.
We're more than wives.
And we'll keep fighting just to live our lives.
We all got the same.
I don't know.
That voice inside.
I don't hear
the
it.
The fire that makes us survive.
I can dance, I can sew, and I know how to lead. I'm an entrepreneur, yes sir, I'm a designer. I make a dress to impress nobody finer. Yeah, I'm an outlaw like Pancho Villa. You mess with me, I'll eat you like a chicken quesadilla.
Real, real women, women have curves.
Ay, por el amor de Dios.
Real, real women, women have curves.
Don't let life drag me down. I'm the queen of this town.
La arena.
I'll be la chingona. I'll be sipping my Corona.
And it's not like the audience is like yelling back at the stage or anything. It's just the audience, you can just tell the audience, the warmth that you feel from the audience towards the performers and the stage. You don't feel that very often. Yeah. And then you hear people on the way out or at intermission, and they're just talking about how much they love the show. They just talk about how much they love the characters, how much they love the story, how they know people, they know someone like that person, they know the stories are so familiar to them. So talk a little bit about that, because the show didn't run as long as I know you guys wanted, but talk about the impact and what you guys were hearing back from the audience members. Because I know there was a lot on social media from audience members and fans of the show that it really hit a nerve with a lot of people.
No, I mean, I think we were blessed that the people who did see it really loved it and fell in love with it. And what was so special for me when we did the album signing was that unlike the actors who get to stage door every night and meet people who see the show so many times, like the people who came to the signing were people who had seen the show 15, 18 times. And they feel like they love and know these characters. And that was my main joy, is that the subject matter of the show is a hard one to sell in a synopsis, I think. Uh-huh. I think that was the biggest challenge. And at the end of the day, I wanted the songs to give life and give faces to these undocumented workers who are just real people, but we often think of them in this box where we dehumanize them in a way because of the rhetoric that is just commonplace these days. And the fact that the show is so joyful is a surprise, I think. People aren't expecting it to be so funny and so fun. Mm-hmm. It's not, we didn't lean into them feeling bad about their situation or feeling bad for themselves. And it's more about them uplifting each other in fun ways. And I think people, the surprise of that and what just the tone of the show is lighter than maybe they'd expect. And I think that's what's so thrilling and surprising to people who go in for different reasons. Maybe mm-hmm. they saw the movie, maybe they, people involved. But I think it's the kind of word of mouth show that we needed a little more time, I think, to to get to scrape our way out of a really crowded end of the year.
With the end of the season, it becomes a bit of a stampede of shows opening.
Yeah,
and it's always hard. But it is the perfect definition of a crowd pleaser, because that's exactly what it was. It was it was so full of heart and joy and happy. That it just was. I mean, but at the same time, it's still focusing on kind of important issues and things to give you to think about, but you don't come out feeling sad or depressed or feeling like you've had somebody lecturing at you for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You just feel like you've witnessed these really wonderful, hardworking, strong women who are persevering and finding under not the easiest circumstances, but they're finding the brighter side of their lives and making it and doing the best they can and still being happy for each other and being supportive of each other. And you come out of the theater feeling good. You just do. Yeah. You know,
I mean, it's the main goal is they're trying to make 200 dresses. It's not even the stakes don't even seem that high. They're just trying to finish this crazy order.
Right.
But you feel so happy when they do. It's a testament to how much you've fallen in love with them by that point.
Right. Well, because they're just such, they're such lovable characters. And there's not, you know, and you've got kind of got a villain, but she's sort of a peripheral character who just like makes a couple of appearances and then she's gone. But, you know, there's no real bad person amongst the group. And they all have different stories and they all have different perspectives, and they're not cardboard cutouts by any means, which is really nice. They're all very distinct individual characters. So there was a CD signing, because the CD, there's a physical CD, which is out, as well as a digital and streaming. I always tell people streaming does not put pennies into anybody's pocket, or it does put just pennies into people's pocket. It doesn't put any money in anybody's pocket, but purchasing a digital download does. Buying a CD does. So I encourage people to do that. It's out on Ghostlight Records. So you can go to the Ghostlight website and get a copy, which would be great. Yeah. So what is going on? Is there anything happening with the future of the show? Is there anything going on future for you? Let's talk about the future now. So we'll talk about the past.
Well, the show, I know they're putting together a tour. So
That's amazing.
They haven't announced details yet, but it's in progress. So I think usually the time frame for shows, like, they usually start their tour the year after.
Right.
They hope. So I'm excited for that, because I think it'll be a really great discovery for people around the country who didn't get a chance to make it in time.
I agree. I think it's twofold. I think it's an important show because I think it's, like I said, it's discussing important topics, especially with the immigration side of it, but it's doing so in a very entertaining way that you'll come out of the show feeling informed, but also feeling happy and feeling warm inside, because you'll feel like I've seen some really wonderful people. And I think it will play really, really well around the country. Because I think there's a lot of people, especially women, will flock to the show. They just will. And women, allies of the women's movement will flock to the show, because it's so well written. And I'm hopefully they'll put together a wonderful cast for the tour. So that's really great news.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm working on way too many projects, as probably most writers are. You never know what's going to be the next big thing. But you mentioned Kiss My Aztec. The plan is to, I think, bring it off Broadway this coming year. So we're putting that together. And I have a show called Borderline I've been working on for a long time, about borderline personality disorder, that is a comedy. And I think we're going to have a production of that at Hartford Stage next season. I have a couple commissions I'm working on that are still in the works. And just, I feel like this experience and getting to Broadway is helping me have other shows that I've worked on just get a little more attention and a little more of a push towards production, because it's hard out there if you don't have a big producing team behind you for something for more challenging material, or something that's not inherently well known of a story. So I'm excited for the future.
Yeah. And you've got on your resume now, you can say that you were a Tony nominee.
Yeah, I'm not complaining about that.
No, that's always a great thing, and very well deserved, by the way.
Thank you.
I was very excited when I saw the nominations came out, and you and Joy were nominated. So congrats on that.
Thanks.
And all the best on your upcoming projects. And I'm really looking forward to the Real Women Have Curves tour when it's finally announced. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that it's coming soon.
Yes.
And like I said, I will put a link on the website. Do you have a website where people can follow you?
It's benjaminvelez.com.
Okay. I will make sure to put that on the website so people can follow you and see where your projects are and see what's up.
Great.
So thanks for being on the show, Benjamin.
Yeah, really nice to meet you. And I can't believe you're from Boyle Heights.
I'm not from Boyle Heights. I'm from LA.
You just live there.
But I know where Boyle Heights is. I've been there many times. And I actually have some friends who were from there, who have lived there. So yeah.
I've never been. I feel like I need to go visit.
Did you ever get to Mexico City?
Well, no.
You've got to go to Mexico City. It's like one of the greatest cities in the world.
That's what I hear from everybody. And
it's fantastic. It's amazing. And Joy can give you a tour.
I know.
It's like one of the best cities in the world. So get your butt to Mexico City.
I will.
And out to Los Angeles so you can see Boyle Heights. And that's the other thing. I griped to everybody when the Tony nominations came out. I cannot believe that you guys did not get a scenic design nomination. The scenic design and the projections were
amazing.
They were gorgeous. And yeah. I'm not a big proponent of projections and the use of projections in scenic design, but the use of projections in your show were perfect. The whole concept of graffiti as art and the use of graffiti and how it worked were gorgeous in the show. And having grown up in Los Angeles, it totally captured the visuals and how things look with the graffiti art on the buildings and stuff. And the whole daydream sequence that you mentioned. Yeah. Oh my God. Stunning. Absolutely stunning. And I was shocked that you didn't get a nomination in that category.
I mean, well Hannah S. Kim, who did them, she's brilliant. And she actually redid all of them post Boston. Because Sergio wanted them to feel even more like painting.
Uh-huh.
So
it was
beautiful.
Because I went with a friend of mine who also had, he lives in New York now. He's actually a critic. And he actually lived in LA for many years. And we sat there at the intermission and both going, oh my God, the use of the projections and the graffiti and the art and stuff are so LA and so beautiful for like the East LA look. And it was just perfect. So anyway, just a side gripe, just a little tangent gripe on my part. Anyway,
I think it's because, my theory is it was all very subtly beautifully done, but it wasn't like in your face.
It wasn't.
I think the nominators probably are responding to what's the biggest.
Sometimes you go for the stuff. They go for the stuff that's very like spectacular looking or very kind of avant-garde or very unique. And this was done very subtly, but very beautifully. And I thought it was perfect. So anyway, just my complaint. Anyway, Benjamin, I'm thrilled. I'm so thrilled you were able to be on the show
because
I love the show and I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks. Well, it's great to meet you. Hopefully we'll talk again soon for another show.
That'd be great. That'd be great. I'd love to have you back.
Was I ever a child? I don't know. Never had a chance not to worry. Other kids, they could take it slow. But I had to grow up in a hurry. One mistake. Now life's on hold. But my mind runs on. And I think of all the things that I could be. Possibilities far as the eye can see, I can see freedom in the California sun. Imagining I could be anyone, anyone. Watch me board a plane, drive a car, finally face a cop without worry. Charge a credit card, show ID. And a future that isn't so blurry. In my head, I am free. So my mind runs on. And I think of all the things that I could be. Possibilities far.